And we will be looking at the early stages of the Exodus. The God's people, the Israelites, are being oppressed by the Egyptians. And God chooses Moses to lead them out. And of course, Moses' brother Aaron, he's a part of this plan. But God has sent Moses and Aaron to Pharaoh. And in verse 1, we read that Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh and said, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Let my people go, so that they may hold a festival to me in the desert." Pharaoh said, "Who is the Lord that I should obey him and let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, and I will not let Israel go." Then they said, "The God of the Hebrews has met with us. Now let us take a 3-day journey into the desert to offer sacrifices to the Lord our God, or he may strike us with plagues or with the sword." At first, Moses says to Pharaoh, "Let us go, or our God will strike us." Not you, not the Egyptians, the Israelites. "Let us go, or he may strike us with a plague, or worse, kill us." And so you can see where, you know, early on here, where Moses' concern is. Well, as a result, Pharaoh, he's angry. He doesn't like this. Not only does he say no, but he makes life more difficult for the Israelites. Pharaoh institutes a decree that the Israelites will have to continue to make bricks, but now get your own straw. And so the Israelites have to continue their hard labor, but in addition, they have to go find their own straw. And this is a disaster. In fact, the whole nation of Israel is angry with Moses and Aaron. The Israelites are angry with their Israelite foremen. The Israelite foremen go to Pharaoh. They get beaten. Everyone's upset with Moses and Aaron. And in Exodus 5:22, Moses returned to the Lord and said, "O Lord, why have you brought trouble upon this people? Is this why you sent us? Is this why you sent us? Ever since I went to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has brought trouble upon this people, and you have not rescued your people at all." Moses is very concerned, but he's very concerned about himself and the Israelites. Well, and that's kind of understandable. They're suffering. He's trying to lead a people, and they're angry with him. And things have gone from bad to worse, and Moses is not concerned about God, he's concerned about himself and the people. This past week, Abby has been sick, and she got sick on Monday. Started getting sick over the weekend, but Monday it got worse. And so Tuesday, I took her to the clinic, and they did the tests, and sure enough, she had strep throat. And so that evening when we pick up Sydney from school and go home, and so Abby's sick with strep throat, and Sydney finds out. And so that evening, Sydney, when she would come into the room where Abby was, she would not just steer clear of Abby, she would steer clear of Abby. And Sydney found the disinfectant spray, and she was spraying everything. And so at one point, I was in a different room, and Abby comes to me, and she has these crocodile tears in her eyes. And she says, "Sydney just keeps telling me not to touch stuff." And I know what she's talking about. She's not exaggerating. I saw what Sydney was doing. I know who Sydney's concerned about. And so I lovingly answered Abby, "Well, honey, it's just we're kind of worried." No, I didn't do that. You know, I go back to her sister and say, "I know you're trying to not get sick, but can you have some compassion? You know, your sister is sick." And Sydney gives me this blank stare like, "And?" "She doesn't feel good." "And?" You know, her concern was very limited. Her concern was self and don't get sick. And so I want to fast forward to Numbers chapter 14. Because here in Exodus 5, Moses is concerned about himself and the Israelites. In Numbers 14, let's fast forward. By the time we get to Numbers 14, Moses has seen God do the 10 plagues. He has seen God part the Red Sea. He has seen God lead them by cloud and by fire. He has seen God provide them with water and manna. And he's seen God do more than that. And he has a different attitude altogether in Numbers 14. We'll read verse 1. That night all the people of the community raised their voices and wept aloud. The people are complaining again. Well, no surprise, that's kind of what they do. But the situation is, by the time we get to Numbers 14, we are at the promised land. You know, God has promised to bring the nation out of Egypt and from slavery to the promised land. We are at the promised land. We're about to go in. Well, they send spies to check out the land. 12 spies go in. 12 spies come out. 10 of them say, "This is a disaster. We can't beat these people. Their cities are fortified." You remember Jericho had walls around it? Now, we know what God did to the walls of Jericho, but they don't. It hadn't happened yet. And they say their cities are fortified. Their people are strong. I mean, the land's great, but this is a disaster. We can't do this. Well, 2 spies come back and say, "Yes, we can." But the people, Israel, listen to the 10. They listen to the bad report and they cry out. They raised their voices. They wept aloud. All the Israelites grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The whole assembly said to them, "If only we had died in Egypt or in the desert." It's like, we don't care. Just somewhere. If we had only died before now, why is the Lord bringing us to this land only to let us fall by the sword? Our wives and children will be taken as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt? And they said to each other, "We should choose a leader and go back to Egypt." So the Israelites, they believe the 10 spies who say, this is not going to be successful. And they grumble and they say, "We wish we were dead. We wish we would have died in Egypt or died in the desert. And here's what we need to do. We need to forget Moses and Aaron, find us a new leader and head back." Well, Moses and Aaron, verse 5, they fall face down in front of the whole Israelite assembly. And Joshua, son of Nun, and Caleb, son of Jephunneh. So these are the 2 spies that believed God could help them conquer these nations, who were among those who had explored the land, tore their clothes and said to the entire assembly. You know, in a movie, this is one of those big speeches that the heroes give to the people. We're going to rally the troops here. We're going to give them courage. And so they say to the assembly, "The land we passed through and explored is exceedingly good. If the Lord is pleased with us, he will lead us into that land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and will give it to us. Only do not rebel against the Lord. And do not be afraid of the people of the land, because we will swallow them up. Their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. Do not be afraid." Now, in my book, that's a pretty good speech. I mean, doesn't that kind of fire you up a little bit? That's exciting. And, you know, do the Israelites, do they change their mind? Do they say, "Well, maybe God can do this"? Guess what the Israelites do? Verse 10, the whole assembly talked about stoning them. "No, in fact, we're going to figure out a way to kill you two." Then the glory of the Lord appeared in the tent of meeting to all the Israelites. So, in this situation, God is sick. I mean, in the analogy of Sidney and Abby, God is the one who's suffering here, isn't he? God is the one who's being doubted. And look at verse 11. See what God thinks about this. The Lord said to Moses, "How long will these people treat me with contempt? How long will they refuse to believe in me? In spite of all the miraculous signs I have performed among them, I will strike them down with a plague and destroy them." Now, I think if I were Moses, see, Moses has had to deal with these people from the beginning. They complained against him from the beginning. They complained against Moses when they didn't have food to eat, when they got tired of the manna, and they didn't have water. I mean, they've complained, and now not only do they want to turn back and wish they had died, but they want to kill Moses and Aaron. Now they're homicidal. If I'm Moses, I'm thinking, this is a pretty good plan, God. Let's kill all these people. I'm tired of them. We're both tired of them. God says, I will strike them down with a plague and destroy them, but I will make you into a nation greater and stronger than they. Now, how does that sound? If I'm Moses, this is sounding even better. You know, do away with these people. I'm tired of them anyway. They're wanting to kill me. Let's start over and make a nation out of me. But what does Moses do? Because before, you know, Moses, he walked around God. He wasn't concerned about God. He was concerned about himself and the Israelites. But look at how Moses answers God. Moses said to the Lord, "Then the Egyptians will hear about it. By your power, you brought these people up from among them, and they will tell the inhabitants of the land about it. They have already heard that you, O Lord, are with these people, and that you, O Lord, have been seen face to face, that your cloud stays over them, that you go before them in a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. If you put these people to death all at one time, the nations who have heard this report about you will say the Lord is not able to bring these people into the land he promised them on oath. So he slaughtered them in the desert. Now may the Lord's strength be displayed. Just as you have declared, the Lord is slow to anger, abounding in love, forgiving sin and rebellion." Moses references God by name or by pronoun 15 times in this passage. Before, when he went to God and said, "God, this is not good. Why did you do this?" He didn't reference God one time in the way that he does here. And here in this passage, before Moses referenced himself numerous times, in this passage, Moses doesn't refer to himself one time. He says, "God, this is your plan. God, if you don't do this, what will people say about you? How will people know how great you are if you kill these people?" It is one of the most amazing passages to me in all of Scripture. Because Moses could have said, "Yes, let's wipe them out, start a new nation with me." But Moses isn't thinking about himself, he's thinking about God. And he's thinking, "God, how can you be glorified? Moses says, "Your reputation will suffer if you do this. People will doubt you, and you won't be glorified." And so let me ask a question. Why do we seek God? When we, you know, some of the things that we do, why do we do them? Why do I come to worship? Why do I come to Bible class? And there's no doubt that that when we come to these things, for example, I come to worship to be encouraged. I come to worship to be strengthened. I come to Bible class to learn more. I come to Bible class to be built up and refreshed. And that's absolutely true. And please don't misunderstand me to say that's bad or wrong or weak. It's not. Those are huge reasons why we come to these things. But do I come and do I seek God only for the ways it helps me? Am I only going to God and doing the things I'm doing for the way that it benefits my life? It is a major sign of spiritual maturity to do more and more spiritual things with God's glory in mind. And by God's glory, I mean How can what I'm doing help glorify God? How can it bring honor to God? How can it bring more praise to God? The word glorify means to make appear glorious. How can I make God look better? And so examples would be when we come to worship, yes, I come to be encouraged. Yes, I come to be strengthened and for the fellowship. But when I'm here, how can I praise God? How can I make Him glorious? Bible class, when I come to Bible class and we're encouraging more and more, come on Sunday morning, come on Wednesday nights to our Bible classes. When I do that, yes, I'm coming because I want to learn. But as I mature more and more, I'm coming because I want to know more. So on Monday and Tuesday, when I'm at work and someone asks me something, I can give a more knowledgeable answer. And God, I can make you look even better. I can glorify you more. I can honor you more. How can what I do in Bible class help me help God? And the things that we do in small group, how can I leave small group a better Christian so I can make God, His name, even better on earth? When I was a youngster, when I was about, let's say about 10, this would be 1980. In 1980, at my house on a Saturday morning, it might not be uncommon for me to be in front of the television, because at that time, kids shows were on Saturday mornings, right? They weren't on during the week. There was no Disney Channel. There was no Nickelodeon. At least not on my TV, there weren't. And so Saturday mornings is when our shows were on. And Saturday morning, I'm in front of the TV. And Dad might walk in and say, "Son, get your shoes on. We need to do some work in the garden today, and I need you to help me." My dad grew up on the farm. My dad grew up a farmer, okay? I grew up, even though in a small town, I grew up in town, and I consider myself a city boy versus a country boy. And my world was Atari, Pac-Man, and the television. That was my world. You know, Dad's world was guns and farming. And so Dad would say, "Come on, let's go help me in the garden. I'm watching Thundercats, Dad. I mean, I can't record it. We don't have a VCR. There's no DVR. This comes on once a week." Well, we go to the garden, and, you know, Dad's putting stakes in the ground, a couple stakes, and ties this string between them. "Why are we doing this, Dad?" "Well, we're gonna plant a row of potatoes." "Why the string?" "Well, we want it to be straight." "Who cares? Is Dad OCD?" He really wasn't, but, you know, he wanted this row to be really straight. "Come on, let's put these potatoes in the ground." You know, and I'm kind of resisting the whole way. This is just not my, I don't, honestly, I wasn't always a real helpful child like I should have been. I think Dad should have been a little harder on me. But anyway, isn't this going to be great, you know, when we get, don't you like fresh potatoes out of the garden? "I don't know, Dad. You know, I like Thundercats." Now let me fast forward. A couple weeks ago, my parents are in the process of moving here, and they're getting their house ready to sell. So we've kind of coached them some. We have the same DNA. When we sold our last house, we needed to move out about half of our stuff to make our house look presentable. And that's not an exaggeration. And they're the same way. And so we loaded up a big U-Haul, okay, and took about half of their stuff to storage so that when potential buyers come in their home, it looks nice. And I don't, this isn't bragging, you understand my point. I don't think in the whole process of, you know, we made plans to do this. I got up on a Saturday morning, we drove down there, got a U-Haul, had a couple helpers, you know, worked a few hours, loaded it up, drove it back here, had some friends meet me, help me unload it in the storage. I don't think in all that time I complained one time. Because compared to when I was a child, I'm mature now. My concern is not Thundercats. You know, my concern is not me anymore. And my parents need something, and I am more than happy to help them. because I love them. And it's what they need that I'm concerned about. And when we read Moses and his transformation, by the time God's ready to kill these people, Moses says, "No, God, that won't benefit you. I want you to be benefited. I want you to be glorified. I'm not concerned about me anymore. I want what's best for you." When we mature as Christians, it's not that we don't value the encouragement that we get and what we get spiritually. But as we mature as Christians, our primary goal is, "God, how can I make you look good?" Because let's face it, God is good, period. But how does our world see Him? Our world sees Him through us. And when we don't look so good, God doesn't look so good. And I just want to encourage you this morning to think more and more, how can I glorify God? There was a Pharisee that invited Jesus to a banquet at his house. He didn't wash his feet. He didn't greet him with a kiss. He didn't put oil on his head. A sinful woman comes in. She does all three. Who's concerned about what? You remember the money changers in the temple courts taking advantage of the people? Jesus comes in and puts a stop to it because of God's house. It should be a house of prayer. Who's concerned about what? Think of the cross. At the foot of the cross, we see soldiers casting lots over Jesus' clothing. And another man, Joseph of Arimathea, comes and asks if he can have the body to place in his own tomb. Am I growing? As a Christian, am I growing in my maturity? Am I more concerned about wanting God to be glorified than I am about what I want? That is a great sign of maturity. This morning we're going to sing a song, offer this as an opportunity. There may be something in your life today that you brought with you and you need our help and strength with. There may be something as a result of this sermon that's just heavy on your heart. He wants to pray for you. If there's something we can do to help you this morning, please come while we stand and sing.
Father,